Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to the lineup, Officer Magazine's roundup of this week's police and law enforcement news. I'm your host, Joe Vince, assistant editor for Officer Magazine. And with me again this week is...
Oh my goodness, I can't wait for spring. This is Frank Borelli, that happily retired lieutenant who mainlines caffeine and lives on sarcasm. Dude, it's going to be 70 here today.
Oh, nice.
Yes. We need to hurry up and get through this. I got to get a motorcycle that needs miles on it.
Sounds good. Well, as always, packed show, so let's get started. Our first story comes out of California, where at least 16 Orange County Sheriff's Department SWAT team members were injured in an explosion at a training facility. They were conducting their annual joint training at the FBI training facility in Irvine when the blast happened. So far, they're not sure what caused the explosion. Thankfully, many of the injuries seem to have been minor. But this is the second big training accident that's happened to California law enforcement in the past 6 months. I believe late October, there was a fire at a gun range where two Los Angeles County deputies were injured. It's one of those things you see and you're concerned. And thankfully, again, no one was seriously or not many people were seriously injured, but scary stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we forget, Joe, it goes hand in hand. So law enforcement does risky jobs, right? I mean, we've got jobs where firearms and explosives and mechanical breaching tools and heavy duty vehicles and all this stuff, repelling equipment, all kinds of stuff is used. Distractionary devices. When you train with them, you can't 100% mitigate the risk.
Right.
And then things happen. We do everything we can. You and I have had this conversation. You've talked to other experts in the industry about training safety. But at the end of the day, and I can't remember who said it, and the statement was this: training is bloodless battle, and battle is bloody training.
Yeah.
And unfortunately in training, things happen. I hope everybody heals okay. I hope that, they learn whatever was done to create the accident. I hope they learn from it and can improve their training protocols, their safety protocols. So obviously we don't ever want it to happen again.
And it is one of those things. I've heard people talk about training scars and the things that happen in exercises that you're able then, even if it's a bad experience, you're able to take into the field and learn from it. And like you said, hopefully they figure out what happened here and it makes things safer going ahead into the future.
Yep.
Moving on to our next story. This is out of Florida, and this is actually who kind of starts the what I'll call the rescue portion of the program. Yep. This was scary body cam video of Broward County Sheriff's deputies. I guess this is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Frank, there'd be an active shooter situation that they responded to where a transit worker walked into his place of business and place of employment and killed a coworker. The deputies responded. There were still employees at the transit facility. In the body cam video, you hear and you see officers confronting the gunman, and you hear the shots. I really thought the body cam video too really captured the what I'll call organized chaos, if you will, because you're seeing people kind of getting out of the way, but then you're also seeing the officers moving in what I'll call an orderly fashion, trying to figure out where the gunman is and neutralize the threat.
So I'm not sure this counts as an active shooter situation, okay, because there's a very defined, there's a definition for that. Four people or more have to be shot.
Gotcha.
But when you have a workplace shooting, The officers responding certainly don't know what they're responding to, and you can tell that from the videos. The what are we dealing with? Who's got what? Where are we going? You're trying to coordinate all of everybody in the response. I'm glad that there weren't more people shot and killed. Kudos to the officers that did what needed to be done and took care of everything on scene. But yeah, these body cams really let you see, like you said, the chaos. And when you start trying to coordinate chaos, was it people say it's kind of like herding cats. Well, no, it's not. It's kind of like trying to collect squirrels and they're on PCP.
I'm going to describe it in a way that I guess isn't necessarily the greatest way, but it reminded me in a lot of respects of a video game of a first person shooter. And but you see how quickly officers need to it moves faster than that, and how quickly officers need to react to what's going on, and as well as listening to their colleagues in the field and figuring out how to best, handle the situation. Again, kudos to the deputies who responded and the way they responded to make sure that, no more people were had to be injured or killed in the situation.
So, real quick point of
Yeah.
interest. You remember the original game Doom, the
Yes.
first-person shooter game Doom? That was designed to represent the first-person shooter out, a perspective. And they had a real hard time doing that when they made that movie. It starred The Rock and Carl Urban, and very interesting. But the same game, the engines that do that are the same ones we use now to train in our virtual simulation. Situation our tools that we have for projected simulation. It's the same game engines that are used in both.
I certainly believe, and I know talking with officers and officials who've used the virtual reality stuff and doing that. Not to get too much off track, but this yeah, a younger generation of law enforcement certainly responds well to that kind of training. Moving on to our next story, going back to California, this is out of Los Angeles, where again, body cam video showing Los Angeles police officers rescuing two teenagers who were trapped in a car following a crash that started because officers were trying to stop them. They did not have lights on their vehicle at night, and their car crashed into a pole. This is a I found an interesting case where you're seeing what essentially was a failed traffic stop turn into a crash where officers went from trying to stop it, at least possibly give a warning or at least just tell them, hey, get your lights on, to having to turn it into a rescue and needing to cut the airbags and everything to extricate both of these teenagers out of the vehicle. Great work on their part.
Yeah, and this is a perfect example of you never know how something's going to go, an incident's going to go, because one minute you're trying to arrest somebody and the next minute you're trying to save them. It kind of shows all those people out there that think cops are just power hungry, violent, abusive, blah, blah, blah. They really need to look at situations like this where officers go from, okay, we're doing the enforcement side of our job, which falls into the protect side of the protect and serve. And then we've got to commit, we got to do this rescue. Well, that's also protect and much more serve, right? I mean, now that you've got people are they've committed these crimes, you're trying to arrest them, and now you rescue them is your job. And being able to change hats that fast is not something that's always easy to do.
I'm so glad you brought that up because this is an example. There's another story that we're not going to talk about, but that posted on the site where it was a stolen vehicle crash, and here these officers go from pursuing a stolen vehicle at high speeds to having to rescue people who were still inside. It's such a great example of how fast they have an officer has to sort of shift gears to do their job. And it's not about, hey, just enforcement. It's about saving lives, all lives.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about. Even when we're enforcing the law, the purpose of those laws is to protect, right? It's health and safety. So even when we're enforcing the law, we're protecting lives, saving lives. That's the whole goal.
Moving on to our next story, go across the country to New York, where we've talked about these bridge rescues before. This was another case, a challenging, what I'll call a challenging rescue, where officers, NYPD officers, were able to rescue a woman on the Brooklyn Bridge in the rain. And you see the body camera from this rescue, and that is a slick bridge. And one of the officers who was trying to talk the woman down, is getting up there and without equipment, but still trying to have a safe ending to this call. And again, it's another example of the type of de-escalation work that officers do, and just how this officer is trying to relate to the woman and get her down, and trying saving her life.
So what I would really like for people to pay attention to in this, Joe, is like you said, he doesn't stop to put on a whole bunch of safety equipment. He doesn't have on a harness. He doesn't have safety ropes. He doesn't have, weight rated climbing D-rings and all that stuff. What he has is human compassion and a sense of duty. And he risks his own well-being to go talk this woman down and save her life, keep her from committing suicide. Again, I go back to all those people who think cops are violent, aggressive, power hungry, yada, 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 yada. I mean, come on. This dude risked his life, no safety equipment, didn't wait around, knew he had to do it, went and did it. Shows compassion, shows duty. It's the humanity, the humane thing to do. It's the human thing to do. This ought to be on this story in particular. Every major broadcast studio ought to have this front and center.
And compassion is exactly the word. Asking her if she has kids. He's talking about his kids, trying to relate. Again, that's the part. You'll hear in stories, or you hear talking about de-escalation, and it becomes this sort of ambiguous term. But if you watch these videos and you see these officers, the way they do try to engage people, whether it's trying to save a potentially suicidal individual, or whether it's trying to talk down an individual with a gun who might be threatening, it's amazing to hear sometimes just how quickly on their feet they do that, to connect with that other individual to at least to try to make them feel some type of empathy and compassion as well. And again, to get a good resolution, to make sure everyone goes home.
It's all about the human connection.
Moving on to our next story. This is out of Ohio, where body camera footage again captured a rescue. And this was of a 2-year-old child who had been kidnapped in a stolen pickup truck. Officers, excuse me, had been pursuing the vehicle, and when they had located it, found the child, the boy, still inside. And his first reaction was, "Where's my daddy?" And you see again, the first response in this was making sure the child is safe. And then they tried to go locate the suspect, who was found, I guess, about half a mile away from where the truck was abandoned. Again, a good resolution to a scary incident.
And the perfect example, right? So this 2-year-old, his first reaction's not stay away from me. It's not who are you? It's not being scared of the officers. It's where's my daddy? And when you think about everything implied in that, I intuitively, I trust you to help me find my daddy, take me to my daddy. Where's my daddy? Obviously, you're not the bad guy. And if a 2-year-old can understand that intuitively, I have to wonder why so many adults can't understand it in the face of proven evidence. But kudos to the officers. And like you said, you know, that rescue portion of our show, this is the last piece of the rescue portion, and I really love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to our next story. This is out of Colorado in Denver, where Denver police and other law enforcement and first responders are going to be receiving psychedelic crisis training. It's basically designed to give officers better ways to let's see the quote here. Better equip them for emotional and behavioral crisis incidents involving psilocybin and other psychedelics. This is something I think you're going to start seeing in more and more areas as you see more different types like marijuana and in this case psychedelics decriminalized or even legalized in areas where law enforcement and first responders are going to maybe need different tools and different tactics in responding to calls that might involve people on these substances.
You know, and I really have mixed emotions about this. Yes, we have to be like we were just talking about the human connection, and we need to try to be able to relate to people and help people. But as politicians, legislatures, as we decriminalize drugs, and another way of looking at that is as we empower and support the use of drugs, we're going to increase the service load on public safety. We don't know whether or not crime's going to go down. They say crime's going to go down. Well, crimes may go down because we're not arresting people for having those drugs now, but that doesn't mean that people on those drugs aren't going to commit more crimes. So we don't know yet.
Right.
But the service rate is certainly going to go up. So rather than arresting people for having illegal drugs, now we're going to try to train law enforcement officers to be more intensely focused, higher skilled social workers and therapists to deal with people as they create their own emotional, mental problems by ingesting these drugs, thinking they're having a good time. The logic of it is lost on me. I feel bad for these Denver officers. I'm glad the citizenry can get assistance. I don't think that's the kind of assistance police officers, and that shouldn't be part of our job. I mean, you know, making sure they're someplace safe, they're controlled, they're contained, whatever, until some shrink shows up or a therapy practitioner, great. But it's not my job to hold your hand for the next 8 hours while you come down off of your magic mushrooms, and you know, empathize with you over the mean green monsters you saw while you visited Jupiter's surface. That's just this.
Well,
I'll stop. I'll
no,
stop because I just get so frustrated with it.
I agree with you. There needs to be that the creation of this of a sort of in between position, department, agency between the fire service and law enforcement that handles these types of situations because both the fire service and law enforcement more and more are handling calls that they aren't designed to handle. It's kind of the nature of how things are changing. And I mean, you talk to people in the fire service and they'll tell you it's like we don't get that many fire calls compared to the other sort of calls that we're getting. And you know, I think communities have to figure out a better way of doing this because it is unfairly saddling these agencies with jobs that that they haven't necessarily been properly trained to do and weren't designed to do. You know, it's kind of like having the water department take care of your electricity. Of course, that takes money, and it takes you know, moving a lot of aircraft carriers, as they say. You know, I think you might start seeing it in the, you know, next 10 years, maybe even sooner.
You know, the challenge here, though, Joe, and I hate to drag this out. Years ago, somebody whose opinion I respect, a gentleman who's close to me, said that every police officer should be required to have a constitutional law degree, which in his mind, that meant every officer should have a 4-year degree in law, right? Pre-law. We're getting ready to put these cops all through law school, which is the next step. Now, we want them to be doing all of this mental, emotional, psychological assistance, therapy, whatever. If we're not careful, police officers are going to be required to hold two PhDs, right? One doctorate in psychology and one doctorate in law. So a juris doctorate and a PhD. And they're going to have to go to school until they're 32 before they can even go to the police academy and go work the street. And by the way, we're only going to pay them $50,000 a year. Nobody's ever, what the hell? Why would anybody ever do that?
No, and it is because of the they're built into sort of the emergency response. It gets thrown on them. And yeah, it is something that communities are going to have to figure out and wrestle with. Moving on to our next story. This is out of Alabama. And it's such a great story. We've been talking about human connection. This is where a Vestavia, or excuse me, a Jefferson County Sheriff's Lieutenant Mike House donated one of his kidneys to Vestavia Hills Police Corporal Jerry Hughes, never having met the man before in his life. Yet here he is giving the gift of life. To a colleague, to another brother in law enforcement. And his attitude was, somebody needed something to live, and I was very lucky to be able to help with that. So great.
I think the key here was what you said, brother in law enforcement, right? You know, we talk about the Thin Blue Line family. We talk about the brothers in blue, and certainly because of the nature of the origins of law enforcement, a lot of our terms are very masculine, but we don't mean to exclude all of our sisters in law enforcement. And our Thin Blue Line family certainly includes everybody who wears a badge, whether their uniform is blue and they have on a badge, or it's brown and they got on a star, or it's green and they've got on something, whatever. You get one officer who sees another officer who needs something to save his life. And he's a match, and he says, I can do that. And, you know, to me, that's just indicative of the kind of sacrifice that cops quite often make. And again, it's a story that you don't hear. You don't get told unless you're going to a pro cop site, which is why you and I are talking, right? You don't see that kind of news. You don't get that kind of feel good story put in your face.
And you know, that way, my dad being an ATF agent, that was something I grew up with. You know, thankfully now I never sort of saw it to this degree where you know, a kidney had to be donated. But I saw it by example at an early age, and fairly frequently too, where if we would go to somewhere, a new place, my dad would go to the police station and just say, hey, look, you know, I'm an ATF agent. I want to know where a safe place is to, you know, go to get a hotel, or where's a good place, even where a good place is even to eat. And, you know, and just like immediately is like, hey, you know, do this, go here. And you know, that was what I was brought up about, and my dad kind of, you know, both by his example and also just, you know, would, you know, would just say is like, hey, you know, when, you know, there is this sort of informal just understanding Yeah, this is just such a great example of it. And
So, quick story for you. When my
yeah.
son went to college, if everybody listening knows, doesn't know, doesn't care, I live in Maryland. My son obviously grew up in Maryland. He went to college in Louisiana, down in Lafayette. And we went down there for the open house orientation, blah, blah, blah. He's doing student orientation stuff. I'm doing parents orientation stuff. And then I had an afternoon open, and the students to be were still all busy. So I went to the campus police department, and I wanted to know, what kind of agency is this? Is this just really a bunch of security guards that, don't know how to handle anything, or are these officers? It's a professional agency, and they're about their business. And it was really interesting that I went in the front, I went into the lobby, and I got out my credentials and introduced myself to the lady working the desk and explained to her that I was a lieutenant from Maryland and my son was going to school there, and I just wanted to talk to somebody to find out, about the agency. And I gave her a business card. I said, I'm also the editorial director for officer.com. And if that does me any good here, if one doesn't open a door, hopefully another one will open a door. It completely blew my mind when the chief of police there walked out and went, "You're Frank Borelli? I read your stuff all the time. Come on back here, dude." And we went back in his office and he gave me a soda and we sat around for an hour and a half talking about the campus, the situation, the training levels for the officers, the multiple jurisdictions that they actually were sworn into and empowered for, the memorandums of understanding they had with the Lafayette Parish. It was an amazing conversation, but it was just, look, yes, it opens a door. I'm a brother cop. There's automatically a level of trust, and let's have a conversation. It's not filtered. When my dad died, and I was talking to the police officers that had responded, and the one officer got on the phone with me, and he's talking to me like I used to talk to citizens. And I'm like, "Hey, dude, time out. I'm a cop. Quit talking to me like I'm the average Joe. Talk to me like I'm a brother cop." And the conversation was an entirely different conversation.
Moving
Anyway,
on to, oh, nope.
nope, go ahead. Sorry, moving on. You're
Yep.
right.
Moving on to our last story, and this is the please put me in jail now, portion, I suppose. This is out of Florida, where a motorcyclist decided he wanted to figure out, what he needed to do to get arrested. He and a fellow motorcyclist taunted Volusia County deputies riding circles around them at an intersection. One of the deputies was able to stop one of the motorcyclists, but the other one, with a will run license plate, took off and led law enforcement on a nearly 90-minute chase before he was apprehended. I don't know if this is just an example of boredom, an example of citizens feeling like, you know what, I bet you they're not going to chase me. I can get away with this. I don't know what, but
It's the perfect example of a motorcyclist who forgets there's things like helicopters.
yeah, good point.
Right? I mean,
Yeah.
we'll run. Cool. We'll chase you. Rock on. Motorcyclists quite often get away because they have such great acceleration powers. And I'll be honest with you, with electric motorcycles like the Harley-Davidson Livewire, I'm scared to ride one because they'll go from like 0 to 60 in a half a second. I mean, there's no power delivery delay. It's just like an electric car, right? You push on the gas pedal, you have an immediate power delivery, and they take off. And then you add maneuverability, you add the ability to go in between obstacles that cars don't fit. You have the ability, all these different things that a motorcycle empowers that cars don't. Doesn't trump the radio, doesn't trump helicopters.
And now
And
drones.
it well, yeah, and drones now. And the only reason this motorcyclist was arrested and not severely injured is because we've grown well past the days where somebody four blocks ahead is going to string a chain across the road and tie it to a light pole and then yank on the other end when right as a motorcyclist is pulling up and hit him in the chest and knock him off the bike. And they'd do that stuff in a heartbeat 30 years ago. Dude been stopped immediately with severe burns from that chain on his chest and his shoulders, hitting the ground at however fast he was going. Thankfully, we're past those days because I don't think a fast chase really calls for potentially lethal force. But I still take some measure of comfort from the fact that they did catch the guy and they did arrest the guy. And that wasn't just a speeding ticket. That was a reckless endangerment.
Oh, yeah.
Fleeing and eluding, resisting arrest. And then every traffic violation he committed. So think about this. Every speed zone he went through, right? So 35 mile an hour, that's one speeding ticket. It changes to 45. That's another speeding ticket. It changes to 55. It's another speeding ticket. It goes down to 25. It's another speeding ticket. He goes up on the sidewalk. He makes a turn without a turn signal. He runs a red light. I had a mile and a half long chase, Joe, way back in the day. I wanted to pull the guy over. He made a right-hand turn from a left-hand turn lane with no signal. And I wanted to pull him over. It was like 3 in the morning. I want to go, dude, come on, really? Just think about it. And he ran. And he had a pound of marijuana on his dashboard. That's why he ran. He was stupid enough to run down a dead-end road. But I had 27 traffic violations in a mile and a half. He paid bigger fines and got more in-home arrest time for the traffic violations than he did the pound of dope.
I mean, looking at this guy here, what he was speeding at times at 145 miles per hour, running through red lights, and then the recklessly going through. I mean, you see in the body cam video where the deputy's trying to, right at the initial intersection before the chase really started, trying to get the guy. And you talked about that maneuverability. He is going in between cars. I think it's between the median and vehicles and. There's in a cruiser, there's no way you're going to be able to get that. But from up above, keeping track and, like you said, radio and coordinating with other law enforcement, because this went into multiple jurisdictions.
And think about what would happen to just he's zooming in between cars if somebody, for whatever reason, had just opened a door.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen that. You see that just in just general traffic anymore.
Right.
Well, that wraps it up for this week's episode. Thank you again for listening. And again, always great to be talking with you, Frank.
Joe, I always enjoy these. I love doing it. Everybody listens, knows we do these other podcasts, right? We do Roll Call. We do the Command Q&A. Paul Peluso does. We've done Active Shooter, Custom Supported Sponsors, blah, blah, blah. I love these lineup roll calls where we talk about people at the end of the week. It's the least filtered podcast that we do, and the ones where I feel like I can be most brutally honest. I'm not sure that was grammatically correct,
but
brutally
so.
Honest with all of my brothers and sisters in law enforcement, the folks listening. You know, I mean, this is the least filtered one that we do, and I really enjoy it.
For everyone, this is Frank's Fun Friday. This is what, yes. You know, he gets to let his hair down and
what
you
hair?
Know, exactly. There you go.
All right, everybody, have a good weekend. We want everybody to stay safe. If you're someplace nice, enjoy the weather. Joe, I'll talk to you Monday.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Lineup. Please remember, the opinions voiced are not those of Officer Media Group or Endeavor Business Media, but only those speaking those opinions themselves. Thank you and stay safe.